This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. What is up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told. It is so good to have you listening to this fine program, episode 91. Dennis from 88 Fingers Louie is on the show, one of my favorite bands of all time. So cool to have him. You know, one thing I never really talked about on this show before is how many friends I've made doing this. You know, you talk about 91 episodes. Sure, a lot of the people I have on the show, I've met them before. I've toured with them before. Some of them are just acquaintances. Some of them are really, really good friends. But a lot of them, I don't know at all. And I've never met them before. And some of them, I just happen to be huge fans of. And whenever it's one of those people, you know, I think back to like Fat Mike, who I guess I know Fat Mike a little bit, but Dennis from Refused, that's a great example of a guy who I'd never met before and was just like, wow, this guy is so influential to me. I can get a little bit nervous. And whenever I get to talk to one of my favorite band's lead singers, like today, I do get a little bit nervous. But that being said, it's a great episode with Dennis from 88 Fingers Louie. Thank you everyone so much for joining me. And I'm sure a lot of the younger people listening to this show, they might not know who 88 Fingers Louie is, but I'll tell you, you really should. 88 was one of the staples of the early skate punk movement, which was big, you know, with Fat Records, Epitaph, Hopeless Records. And they put out a classic album, their first album called Behind Bars. Then, right as they were about to get huge, they broke up. And it was a sad moment for me. I never got to see the band until they came back with an even better record, Back on the Streets. But then guess what? They broke up again. And then what happened next was pretty crazy. Two of the members of the band, Joe Principe and Dan, aka Mr. Precision, started a new band with a new singer, and that band was called Rise Against. So it was very cool to get Dennis's opinion on the demise of 88 Fingers Louie, The Rise of Rise Against, and now the great return of 88 Fingers Louie. They have a brand new album out now. It is awesome, and I am very excited to see them play. I hope I can ASAP. Before we jump into that, shout out to all my sinners out in Australia. I am coming for you. I am heading to Australia this Friday to play solo with my project River Oaks. I'm playing with Hawthorne Heights. It's going to be a time. I am playing pretty much all of the Australian major cities and more. So check that out. I'm sure you can figure out where to buy tickets or whatever you got to do. But if you see me around, see me at the show, come say what's up. I'm doing this tour completely solo. I'm not even bringing anyone with me. The first flight is 22 hours on the plane. That's plus stopovers all the way from Toronto to Perth. So, wow. So, yeah. So, I might be a little lonely. So, yeah. Come say what's up. And as always, if you ever see me in public, if you ever see me at a show, please come say what's up. It's always nice to hear people say, oh, Shane, I dig the podcast. This was my favorite episode. So, I love all that stuff. Also, my band Silverstein has a brand new record out now. It's been out for about a month. It continues to top the charts. Well, not really, but it's doing very, very well. Thank you to everyone who's checked it out so far, whether it's like an actual vinyl purchase or just, you know, streaming a couple tracks on Spotify. It is all good. I just want y'all to hear the new Silverstein record. Also, if you're listening to this show for the first time, welcome. Make sure you're subscribed. Hit the little subscribe button and take a look back. Like I said, we've got 90 episodes. There truly is something for everyone. So please do yourself a favor and check out some of the old episodes as well. And if you want to get in touch with me, it's real easy. We have an email address, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I am on all the social medias. And lastly, if you don't like the show, you can call the hate line. It is 657-666-HATE. Again, that is 657-666-HATE. Please call, leave me a message, and give it to me, man. Give me the hate. I love the hate. All right, let's jump in to this week's chat with Dennis Buckley of 88 Fingers Louie. I got Dennis on the line, Dennis Buckley of 88 Fingers Louie, one of my favorite bands of all time.
Oh, shit.
And it's it's really good to talk to you. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody, and I said to a good friend of mine, and I said, oh, yeah, no, I'm talking to Dennis Buckley. And they go, who's that? I go, oh, Dennis from 88 Fingers Louie. And he goes, oh, I never knew his last name. And I said, I never knew his last name either. Because, you know, like back in those days, you know, the only way you knew who people were was like what it said in like the liner notes of the fucking CD.
Right, right.
You know, so I knew you as Dennis and like Dennis and Joe, and I knew Dan, but I knew him as like Mr. Precision, you know. So yeah. It's funny, like, because you guys never put your last names in the CD booklet. I never knew.
No, I guess we didn't. Yeah, I guess we didn't. You know,
it's funny
that,
you know?
Back then, too, any like musician buddies I'd have, like in my phone book or whatever, I would never know their last names either. So it would be, you know, Strung Out. So it would be just Rob Strung Out. It would be,
right,
you know, Daryl Bullevils. It just, nobody knew anybody's last name up here, at least down here.
It's funny. Yeah, no, it's funny. It's amazing how those things have changed. And, you know, now, like, I mean, now, like, no one's private anymore. You know, everything's out on the internet, like, you know, I remember you had a kid because you had the song, yeah, you know, Joy Boy, where you talk about your kid. So that's the only reason I knew anything personal about you other than what you might read about in an interview. But, like, let's be honest, there wasn't a lot of interviews going on back then, you know, the kids could really read either. It was like sometimes there were zines or like websites, but, you know, you guys were almost, I mean, you guys predated websites.
Yeah. We don't keep very well up to date.
No, it's funny. And you know, it's another little tidbit while I have you, and I'm embarrassing myself. The first band that I ever emailed, ever, was you guys. And I remember...
Was it really us? Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember the email address was like fingerslou88@aol.com or something like that.
Yep. That was it.
And I emailed it, and I think it was... right after you guys broke up, the first time.
Yeah.
And I was sad. And I remember, you know, saying, oh, like, I love you guys. And I know I never email any bands or anything, but like, you know, and of course I wrote something like, you guys must get thousands of emails a day. You know, that's like the funny thing too. Everyone thinks everyone in these bands are like superstars, you know? And, Dan got back to me and I remember he wrote like, he wrote something like, yeah, like we're done. You know, thanks for like buying our records and whatever. And I said like, oh, I never got to see you guys live. And Dan wrote something like, ah, we weren't really a very good live band anyways.
Yeah, that sounds like Dan.
So that's my little history of being a kid coming up on you guys.
Oh, but that's crazy.
I always loved your band and it's really, really good to have you on the show. How's your day going today?
Going good. I'm running around. This is like the first full day I've had since we've been back from Europe that I've been able to like run errands and stuff. And I was so caught up in like, just like menial stuff, like grocery shopping. And then I got your text. They came in, I'll call you in 10 minutes. I'm like, fuck, I'm in the middle of this grocery store. Oh, I got to haul ass back home.
Oh, it's all good, man. No, these things happen. And like, I was making a joke last week. I had Cole from Swimmers on and I was making a joke. Like I called him right at like 2 o'clock or whatever. And he answered and we were like, boom. And I was like, damn, how, like when two punk rockers can get together and like actually be on time, that's an amazing thing.
Yes.
So don't sweat being late, man. It happens almost every time.
Right,
and most
of
the time it's my fault. So, hey, whatever. So how did Europe go?
I'll take one for the team. Tour went great. Like it was our first time there, and first time in Europe since 2010. We hopped over to do Grossrock in 2010, but it was our first like full tour over there since '99. Started '99.
Wow.
So 18 years, something like that. So it was eye opening. You know, it's a whole different world over there now, man. Like it's.
Well, yeah.
The way people communicate, the way people attend shows, like everything was completely different than what I was used to experiencing before.
I mean, in 1999, was there even like the Euro yet?
Was there what?
Was there the Euro yet? like, or were you still using different currency in different countries? Because I don't know when the Euro. I'm sure all the Europeans are shaking their head and saying it was like.
Oh yeah, no, it was different.
It was different currencies then.
It was. You know, You hope you stayed in the UK long because, you know, pounds are pretty easy to, you know, figure out. But then, you know, you'd have rubles and pesos and, you know, God knows what else.
I know. It's so funny, man. That's cool. Yeah. And like, I guess your memory, too, of 1999, 18 years ago, when you were, you know, a young buck or a younger buck.
Younger.
And the kids were younger, too. Like, did you find the fans were, you know, the same kids that saw you in 99, 18 years later? Or did you find it was like there had been a lot of younger people that had somehow found out about 88 Fingers Louie over the last 18 years?
I think it was a pretty good mix of both. I mean, we definitely had people coming up to us saying, like, hey, man, we were at your last show, you know, in Leeds. We were at your last show in London, like, you know, places like that. But then, you know, we played a few festivals where a lot of people were, you know, younger and, you know, a lot of the credit for people, you know, younger people getting into us is, you know, has been Rise Against.
Right.
You know, I can't hide behind the fact that, you know, the mileage Joe got out of Rise Against definitely helped 88 Fingers.
Sure.
Even Dan stayed in Rise Against too. And the band that he did after that. It was a nice mix. And then of course, you know, you got to see people bring their kids too. And their kids are at the age now where they're trying to figure out, okay, what kind of music do I like? What kind of music do I not like? And there's, you know, what better way to introduce kids to music than bring them to a festival and make it, you know, a wide variety of bands to check out. So, it was a nice mix of both. I got it, sure.
Is it weird being just gone for so long, like from tour where, you know, and I hate to harp on this, but like we're older now. You know, and like when you're older, there's different things you care about, you know, and you're used to certain like levels of comfort. Was it weird to go back and kind of like try to tour the same way because you were, you know, you're like, okay, this is how tour is. Like, you guys toured for years all over, you know, the US and Europe and everything. Was it weird going back and being like, oh shit, like this is different or I'm different, or like trying to kind of figure out how to do it again?
Yeah, well, because for me, I was the only one in the band that, you know, when 88 stopped in 99 for the second time, I first of all, I said I was never going to do a band again. Like, I was so tired of band assholes and, you know, the whole thing. You swear you're never going to pick up a microphone again. And then little by little, I started doing music, but none of the bands I was ever in really did any touring outside of, you know, playing Milwaukee, Wisconsin or something. So, and then since this band's been back together, what, really since 2014, we've only done Weekend Warrior type of stuff.
Sure.
So the idea that I spent, you know, what, 18 days with these guys was like, oh, what's going to be the breaking point? Like, at what point am I going to pull, you know, I'm a creature of habit. I know I was an asshole back then. I'm still capable of being an asshole now. At what point, what was going to be my breaking point? At what point was Dan going to say something that was going to make me fly off the handle, you know what I mean?
And
we never reached it. The you know, that's not saying people can get crabby with each other because, you know, you're cooped up in a fucking van for that long. But it was as difficult as an adjustment as I thought it was going to be. I kind of had a little bit of anxiety going into this tour. I didn't tell the guys in the band because I didn't want to worry them. But like,
sure.
I haven't been away from home, you know, for that period of time since, you know, 1999. And the difference is in 1999, my son was living with his mom.
Yeah.
And he was 4 years old. Now he's almost 22 and he's living with me. And now I'm like, oh, you get the place to yourself for 2 weeks? Motherfucker, you got to have this place clean when I get home. Like, that's what it's turned into.
That's so funny. And yeah, man, that's wow. Like, to think of that, it's like crazy, you know, because I just, you know, I like I said earlier, I like loved your band so much, and I kind of like, I always wanted to know more about you as being, you know, the front man of one of my favorite bands, but it was like you were such a private person other than what you kind of put in your songs. So that's kind of crazy now to think that you have a 22-year-old son and that you wrote that song, like I mentioned, about him. When he got older and stuff, you know, what was it like for him realizing that, you know, his dad was this like punk rocker? And is he into punk rock and stuff now, or what's he into?
Oh yeah, he totally is. He's a smartass. Like, he definitely takes after me. He's at the age now, or, you know, he's been at the age now for a few years where he'll be blunt. He'll be like, Dad, you know, I don't know what's going on with your voice, but I'm not as into it as I used to be. You know, you need to scream more. You kind of sound like you're whining when you're singing. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. But then he'll turn around and be like, hey man, Rye Fest is coming up. Am I going to be able to get a ticket? Like, yes. Or, you know, his favorite band's coming through town. Like, you know, I've been fortunate enough over the years, as I'm sure you have too, just to meet, you know, a variety of bands that, you know, will gladly hook you up, for lack of a better word, you know, when they come to town. Like, hey man,
sure,
I'd love to see you. Let's grab dinner. I'll get you guys on the list. You know, stuff like that. So he's aware of the perks that he gets as a son of a musician. And, you know, I think if it was the other way around, I would think my kid was full of shit if he said that he's liked me since the moment he put, you know, 88 Fingers Louie on. Like,
well, right.
People, you know, kids, you know, everybody's tastes change. He's more of the, he went through a bout of, a lot of the more like street punk type of stuff, like your Gothic Murphys and your Screaming Utters, and not really Screaming Utters, what am I saying? Like, Class of 56, a lot of, you know, street punk stuff. And now he's branched down a little more of the garage rock stuff. But he's always got time for the classics. He's, I let him drive me around, you know, shopping or visiting family or whatever. And, you know, his shuffle goes everywhere from, you know, Operation Ivy to Jawbreaker to, you know, and it's like,
oh, that sounds like a kid with his head on straight. I back that.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
Dad did a good job figuring out his music.
I'm gonna go ahead and pat myself on the back.
Yeah, you showed him some good bands. No, that's great. Yeah. Speaking of the new 88 Fingers Louie record, it is out now. The first record, I guess, since Back on the Streets, right?
Well, first full length since Back on the Streets.
That's what
first,
I mean. Yeah.
Like, new music since the Kid Dynamite split.
Yeah, which is, wow, which is going back a while. Kid Dynamite, yeah, they've been broken up for a while, too. But wild, just wild to be back. And you know, I put the record on right when it came out. I've never been more excited, and the record is great. You definitely the record did what I wanted it to do. As a fan of the band, you know, it still had the fast parts, but it was true to the original, but still some modernization. How hard was it for you as a singer? Because this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, so we talk about singing a fair amount. As a singer, being like, I haven't been in the studio, I haven't recorded, you know, a song seriously, like an 88 Fingers Louis song in so long. How hard was it just to walk in and do it?
You know what? I definitely sweated it in the days leading up to it. You know, I kind of procrastinated on some lyrics, and I kind of did like a you know, 1 week before I went in the studio, I just kind of crammed and any missing lines I had in songs, I kind of tidied those up. And, you know, the difference this time around is we recorded it in Dan's, he's got his own studio.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a lot more relaxed. We didn't have to say, like, we didn't purchase a block of 10 days at a studio and say, oh, shit, we've got to get everything done. You know, music, vocals, overdubs, mixing, everything's got to get done in 10 days. This time around, I was like, dude, come in when you can. Let's spend 8 to 10 hours a day on vocals. And we did that, you know, three or four days, maybe 3.5 days. And, you know, Dan and I's relationship over the years, you know, whether it was said in interviews or not, we didn't get along. Like, one of the reasons why the band couldn't stay together is him and I butted heads quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
More so than Joe and I. I mean, Joe and I definitely, and Joe and Dan. I mean, everybody's butted heads with everybody, but, you know, Dan and I especially over the years, we knew how to push each other's buttons. So the idea that, you know, at first it was like, yeah, we're going to record this in my studio where I'm going to be the producer and the engineer. And I'm like, oh, this motherfucker's going to, he's going to take control of everything. And it's going to be like fucking, it's going to be like I'm recording with Donald Trump or some shit.
The Mr. Precision Show, yes.
Exactly. But it could not have been more relaxed. I mean, it was, Dewey had just done takes on like the first two songs. And I started laughing in the vocal booth. And he goes, what's so funny? I go, dude, if we were doing this 18 years ago, I would have told you to go fuck yourself. And I would have stormed out of here. We wouldn't have made it through 30 seconds of the first song.
Right.
I said, this is fucking great. He's like, all right, shut up and let's keep going. And the time I spent there was amazing. And to the point where, you know, someone giving us a buttload of money to record our follow-up, I definitely want to keep using Dan and Dan's studio as much as possible.
Right, sure. Okay, so that's good. So this is not a one-off thing. You guys are staying together, no, you're doing some more shows, and you hope to do another record.
Oh, yeah.
That's great news.
We got a bunch of stuff still lined up for this year. We're going to record at least one EP before the end of the year. And then we've already talked about ideas that we have for the next full length. So we're not, we might slow down here and there, but we're definitely not breaking up.
Do you have some regrets now about, like, you know, you talk about how you used to be like, okay, it would be 30 minutes and I'd be fucking out of here, you know, and you talk about the, like,
yeah,
seems like you had a bit of a chip on your shoulder maybe.
Now,
you know, you've kind of chilled out a little bit and relaxed. Is that just something that is just maturity now, having a kid, raising a child, you know, going through all those kinds of things? And do you have regrets about it? Like, do you wish back in, you know, 99, you know, if you had a little bit, your head on a little bit straighter, mm-hmm, or whatever. That's a bad expression.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you had your shit together a little bit more, maybe, you know, you guys would have gotten through the 2000s and maybe put out some great records.
You know, it's tough to say because I've definitely kind of gone back to like what my state of mind was back then. And
yeah,
I was just an angry dude. I was dealing with the fallout of a pretty bitter divorce, and that was what the majority of Back in the Streets was about.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to see my kid as much as possible, but he was, you know, sometimes an hour to 2 hours away from me, and, you know, having the ways and means of getting out to visit him was tough. And then it was like, okay, well, I got to get out and do this band while it getting as good. And, you know, I would have my, for lack of a better word, I'd have my breakdowns on the tour, because I'd be calling home, you know, this is obviously before cell phones, I'd be fucking calling from a payphone, hoping to God that I would get to talk to my kid for 5 minutes, and then I'd be a wreck because he'd say stuff like, when are you coming home, Daddy? You know, I want to take you to Chuck E. Cheese or, you know, whatever. And it was rough, but I was also just like, I was just a really angry guy. And I think had I even, being a dad or not, I was just too angry. I was sitting in the booze pretty hard. And when the band split up what we thought was the final time, I think I maybe waited another year or two, and I started going to therapy, started going to like anger management, you know, stuff. And I just kind of learned to not sweat the small stuff as much. And so this time around, it's been a lot easier. I know when to keep things to myself. I know when it's important to say something that's bothering me. The lines of communication with everybody in the band is stronger than it's ever been.
Fantastic.
No one's afraid to say they can't do a tour because of work or family or whatever. So, but you know, of course, I look back. I mean, when we split up in '99, we had already started demoing the follow-up to Back on the Streets. I had just been blown off songwriting practices because I just wasn't interested. And then we went and got in the van. We went on what was supposed to be our final tour. We were supposed to do a bunch of dates with the AFI, I think it was. Yeah, we were supposed to do like 4 or 5 weeks with them. And we didn't even make it to our first show. They were playing me demos of songs. This was the conversation that ended the band. They were playing me demos of songs that I was like, this is fucking generic. I don't like this. I'm not into this. I mean, I was listening to the fucking Radiohead and the Verve and just, you know, smoking lots of pot, listening to British indie rock. I had no time for punk rock at the time. And at one point, Joe goes, "Dude, you're not committing to anything right now. Do you even want to do this band?"
Right.
And I said, "Well, let's just do this tour and take some time off, because I got to get my head straight when we get back from this tour."
Yeah.
And unfortunately, rather than say, "Fuck, okay, let's do this tour," Joe and Dane, to some extent, were like, "Well, fuck you. If you're not into it, we're going home."
Yeah.
So we turned around after driving for 12 fucking hours, turned around, went home, and didn't talk to those dudes for like a solid year. And the irony is, and I'm kicking myself to this day, the irony is I last remembered 4 of those songs were on the first Rise Against record. That Tim
son of a bitch.
Not that I have any sort of illusion that like, oh, I would have just stuck to it. I would have been as big as Rise Against. No one's saying that, but it's just ironic because, you know, that's the one record that Dan played on, and every once in a while we'll be at a venue and over the PA, the first Rise Against record will come out. I'll be like, that song sounds familiar. Oh, yeah, I said no to that one.
Right. Now, it's, I mean, I hindsight is 20/20 on these things. It's funny, and I have this memory, and I mean, you guys broke up a couple times, and there was different things going on, and there were other you know, projects people were forming, but I remember, and I think it was maybe at this time you talk about, I think that they had tried to look for a new singer for 88 Fingers Louie at
they
that
did.
Point, and I remember seeing, seeing like a email go out, and I was probably 18 or 19 at the time, and seeing it, I was like, oh my God, my favorite band needs a singer. And I was like a singer in a band, but I couldn't scream at that point. I mean, now people know me for being a screamer in Silverstein, but I couldn't scream. And they were like, oh, the has to be, you know, has to be able to scream. You need someone that can scream. And I was like, ah, fuck. And I was like, I was like, I could go to Chicago. I could try out. And everything, and I never did it because I was like, oh, they're gonna want to hear me scream, and I won't be able to. But I seriously considered trying out because, you know, I love the band so much, and you know, it's funny and you know, I don't know if you know this, but Rise Against is actually the intro of this show. So that's funny too, and you know, and we've toured. Silverstein's toured with Rise Against very many times. I just saw them play in Toronto, you know, and hung out with all of them. And And I actually asked Joe about it because I said, oh, I'm going to have Dennis on the podcast. And Joe says, yeah, I don't know if he's mad at me like, or what's going on. And I was like, well, why aren't you like doing the 88 stuff, you know? And he's like, oh. I don't know. Like it's, you know, so I'm kind of, I guess that's my question for you is like, how is Joe, I mean, you guys did some other stuff and Joe wasn't involved.
Yeah.
What was the conversation there? Because he obviously was an important part of 88.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess the real seed of the reunion came way back in 2009. Dan had the idea of doing a show, a one-off show, to say, hey, man, it's been 10 years since we played our last show. How funny would it be to do like a 10-year breakup anniversary show? I'm like, yeah, that sounds fucking cool. Let's do it.
Right.
And we reached out to Joe, and Joe was in the middle of, you know, Rise Against campaign. So he couldn't do it. But that show kind of spurred, that one-off show turned into Riot Fest show that year.
Right, of course.
Grooves Rock that following year, and then we started booking it up. We actually started booking a UK tour after that, and that kind of fell through. And we took some of those dates, and we turned it into a Canadian tour. I shouldn't say Canadian tour. It was like four or five dates, but, you know, Toronto being one of the dates. And we came back from that. I think we did one more show, and then I told Dan and the other guys. We had this buddy of mine, John Contreras, playing bass at the time.
Yeah,
I said, hey, for the first time, let's break up and stay friends. It's like, let's break up drama-free and just walk away. So, you know, whether everybody agreed that that was the right decision at the time, I don't know, but we walked away. Everybody walked away, you know, as friends. And then 2013 rolls around, and Joe and I had a conversation, and I honestly don't remember who brought it up, but 2013 marks 20 years that the band had been since the band had formed. We formed in 93.
Yeah.
And I think it was Joe who said, well, fuck, man, let me figure out the Rise Against stuff, and if we can make this happen, let's do a fucking old school 88 show. And that was, you know, that was music to my fucking ears. I would love, you know.
Right, sure.
Nothing made me happier than be on stage with Joe. So we probably added into a show at the very end of 2013, and we had everybody that had ever been in the band play. We had,
cool,
obviously, Joe, Dan, and I. We had
all your drummers.
All of our drummers. Don played a whole bunch of stuff. Glenn flew in from Oregon and played a whole bunch of stuff. And then we did a benefit show for an old sound man, buddy of ours that passed away, kind of helped with some medical stuff, helped the family pay with medical bills and stuff. And after that show, Joe's like, I, you know, what's the plan for this? I said, I think we want to keep doing it. You know, let's, you want to try and figure it out around the Rise Against schedule. And he goes, I can't even pretend to say I could do that because if I'm not doing Rise Against, I'm with my family.
Right. Like, of course. It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that made total sense. And I said, well, we're going to do it. At that point, I didn't think we were going to write any new music.
Sure.
I just figured we were going to just, you know, kind of pull a Pixies and just do a bunch of reunion stuff and see where that went. And then, you know, then it was, I don't know, midway through 2014 when the demos started coming out and people started talking about new music. And at that point, I didn't talk to Joe about it just because I just knew Joe wasn't going to be a part of it. It wasn't like a fuck you to him. It was just like, well, no point in talking to the old bass player about writing new music when he's when he's writing music with somebody else.
Sure. Well, and also, I mean, Rise Against is on a major label. Joe's probably signed. He's probably got a contract with somebody.
Oh, yeah. Who
like,
knows what kind of
he
legal...
can't just go and record with someone else without getting permission. Probably, you know, that's probably a whole thing too.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure. I don't pretend to know what any of that's about, but I got to imagine there's a variety of hoops that guy'd have to jump through.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, what's funny. When we did our, one of our first tours when Silverstein was getting off the ground was with Rise Against. We did 2 weeks with them. This is like 2003.
Oh, wow.
And I had an 88 Fingers Louis shirt. It was blue. It had a robot on it. And it said, there are several codes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I know several of them.
And I know several of them. I remember that quote exactly.
I still have the shirt. So I like had it on one day. And I said to Joe, look. And he was just like, It wasn't like he was embarrassed of 88, but he was, you know, he's like, oh, it's like my old band. I'm like, it's one of the greatest punk bands ever. So shut the fuck up. This, and it's your band, and you're a great bass player. Don't downplay this band.
Yeah.
So you know, I know that, you know, obviously, like after that, Rise Against just exploded, and they were, that was, yeah, on that tour was when I found out they were going to sign to a major label. And I remember talking to Tim about it, and Tim saying, I don't know, like, we don't even know if this is a good idea. And it worked out. And who thought that that kind of music that they were writing, you know, for you, basically, you know, an extension of that, would be able to be played on the radio? Like, no one thought that.
Right. No.
Like,
no.
It must have blown your fucking mind when you started hearing Rise Against on the radio.
Oh, it was a trip. All of a sudden, you know, it wasn't any sort of competitive thing for me, but I actively picked up new Rise Against records as they came out because I was friends with all those guys. Like, I would never say a bad word about Tim. I think Tim's a great fucking guy. I was a huge fan of Baxter. I love the Killing Tree, you know?
Yeah.
Tim and I have had so many talks about various types of music over the years. Like, I consider that dude, you know, one of the most stand-up dudes out there. So
he's one of the best, absolutely.
I had an active interest in what these guys were doing. And then when I started hearing songs like Give It All on the fucking radio, I'm like, wait a second. Someone pulling a fucking joke here? Did some DJ, did some disc jockey in Chicago go to the bathroom and his fucking intern decided, huh, I'm going on a punk rock song. I guess what you know what I mean? And then it just, all of a sudden you couldn't turn on the fucking, you know, back when they were playing music videos on TV, you couldn't turn on MTV or VH1 without seeing a fucking video. And it's like, oh, down there doing K-Rock's Rainy Rose, or they're going to do Q101's Christmas in Jamboree, whatever. And I'm like, oh, this is insane. And then, you know, bumping into Joe and Tim right around that time, too, when they were at home, and they were just shrugging their shoulders. They couldn't believe it. They were just as incredulous about it as everybody else. Like, we're going to just ride this out. I think they probably thought they had a year or two to ride it out.
I think you're right, yeah. I know, and like I remember the one of the first. When I, you know, I interview people now, I don't claim to be a journalist or anything, but I remember back in the day we were on tour with Rise Against on the second time, so it would have been like 2007, and there was some publication set up this thing where we interview them and they interview us or whatever. So like, I mean, I'm going to take it seriously. So I asked Tim about the radio thing, and I said, you know, oh hey, like, what's that about? Like, is it weird, you know? And he goes, you know what? They came to us. We didn't change our music for the radio. The radio just started playing our music. And exactly, like you said, they shrugged their shoulders and said, well, fuck it. Like, we're not going to say no. Don't play our music that we love, that we care about. So it's just for you, from your perspective, I think is so interesting because you literally were like a couple years away from that potentially happening. I mean, obviously, you're not Tim. Tim's not you. And, you know, but who knows how it would have evolved, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, you and Tim basically have very similar vocal styles.
Yeah, I don't know if I see that, if I hear that, but I've heard that from other people over the years. Like,
right.
Yeah. I just can tell you that I love his voice. I think he's got a great voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of your voice, you know, the new record, you sound great. Some of the old records, I always felt like your vocals were buried.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, Behind Bars, very, very buried, and the old stuff, too, and even Back on the Streets is pretty buried, and I always bummed me out. I was always like, can I call whoever mixes this and be like, can I get the vocal up one, you know? Because it always bummed me out, and the new record's great because I can hear you.
I think back then, there was definitely a level of insecurity on my part. I'll be honest with you. I was not a fan of my own voice. And I can't say this any other way other than I think Dan was just a whore for his guitar sound. And I think he just wanted to make sure the guitars on the other 88 stuff were loud. Joe wanted to make
the
sure
bass was pretty,
bass.
The bass is pretty ripping on those songs too.
Yeah.
But he's a great bass player. So, you know,
he is.
Yeah.
The three things I think that were the priority back then were loud, hard, noisy guitars, whatever, Joe's galloping bass, and they had that fucking kick had to be nice and loud.
Yeah.
because everybody wanted to have that NoFX fucking kick back then. And then I was like, oh, then Dennis's vocals will come in. Yeah, they'll be okay. We'll rest them in the mix. And I was just like,
yeah.
You know, I would cringe when I would hear my vocals isolated. Because again, we were working on a limited amount of time. I was having to do, you know, 4 or 5 songs a day, and I only had a, you know, short amount of time to do it. So it was like, all right, it's punk rock. It doesn't have to be perfect. And, you know, right. As been the technology over the years, now it's like, oh, we can still be punk rock, but God damn it, I'm going to sing this right.
Exactly.
This time. And that's what I want to make sure I did now, especially with this record, because, you know, I spend the most, even though I did some cramming with lyrics at the last minute, I've never spent more time working on melodies and working on lyrics than I did on this record. This
is right. Absolutely.
This is a labor of love in the purest sense, I think.
Well, you know, it's funny too, and this doesn't get talked about anymore, and younger people, especially even younger people in bands, don't understand mm-hmm. this, but like, we come from an era where we remember recording on 2-inch tape and recording on, you know, yeah. ADAT and stuff, to where like, okay, you do a take and then they go, okay. And to do it again, you'd have to wait for the tape to rewind and then do it again. And that takes time to, you yeah. know, and not to mention like auto-tune. I mean, like back then it wasn't a thing. And I don't right. like a lot of people don't understand that auto-tune is on just about every record these days. People think of auto-tune, they think of T-Pain, and they think that that's mm-hmm. like that's like what, oh, when I hear that sound, then oh, that's auto-tune. So if I don't hear that, it's not auto-tuned.
Yeah.
But that's just the fact of the matter.
Sure. It's just subtle. Yeah.
It's subtle, yeah. And I mean, honestly, like, I don't know if without auto-tune I would be a professional singer. At least when I started, I was pretty damn pitchy. But we came up in 2003 when it was like, okay, yeah, you can auto-tune it, and then I sound good, you know? So it's like funny now looking back at Behind Bars or to a lesser extent Back on the Streets, those records, like, it's like, oh, well, the singer can't sing. He's like out of key. It's like, no, it's not that he couldn't sing. It's that he only got one take to do it, and then they had to rewind the tape.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, exactly.
And there was no auto-tune. Exactly. So it's just a funny thing. Just it's like of that era. And then, of course, it's like everyone was trying to be punk and you know, and mm-hmm. and no one thought this was like going to be a real career. I'm sure you didn't think you were going to be putting out a new record in 2017.
Yeah, no one thought that far ahead. I was taking, even back then, I was just taking things really every few months at a time because, you know, I feel like I was the only, well, I was certainly the only parent in the band back then.
Yeah.
But I think I was the only one because of it. I was one of the only ones that was living outside their parents' house. I think Joe and Dan, for the majority of 88's time back then, were living in their parents' house. So they had nothing in the way of too much utilities, maybe a car payment here, a phone payment there.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, I didn't think, you know, I was thinking about this when I was in Europe. I used to think every tour that we did could have been our last because we were just such a volatile group, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me with his Irish temper, Joe with his Italian temper, Dan just being Dan. it was tough, but like I said, everybody's grown up and it's a whole different ballgame now.
Was it weird when you guys like one thing I loved about your band is that you guys were always heavier? And you guys had like mm-hmm. a lot of hardcore influence, and I love that because there mm-hmm. weren't that many bands really kind of doing it like you guys did. Was it hard for you guys like fitting in because you didn't really fit in with, you know, the Fat Records like poppy skate punk, and you definitely didn't mm-hmm. fit in with like hardcore bands. Like, I mean, you guys did like a Gorilla Biscuits cover and stuff, but you were in no way in that world either.
Right.
So,
right.
So how, because I can relate this a little bit to myself, which I always do in these podcast episodes, because Silverstein's like that too, where we don't really fit in because we're too soft for the metal bands and we're too heavy for the pop punk bands. So how was that for
right,
you guys?
Right.
Was that a challenge?
I think in some ways it was, but that was the bonus of having four guys with four different musical tastes in the band. You know, I certainly was not. I loved hardcore, but I didn't love it as much as Joe did. You
right.
know what I mean? I loved certain punk rock bands, but I didn't love those bands as much as Dan and Joe did.
Right.
I never was a metal guy. I had my little hard rock phase before I got into punk rock, you know.
Yep.
Or hair metal, whatever the fuck you want to call it. But I never had a thrash metal phase. I didn't start listening to bands like Slayer until maybe 10 years ago. that was completely out of my range for the longest time.
Yeah.
I was a kid that just, I grew up on what my parents listened to, and that was the Beatles and, you know, Motown and Stax and you know, and then the '70s, you know, yacht rock stuff. Like,
yeah.
So I always had a really keen sense of melody. And what I thought was cool was, as we started working more of a hardcore influence into our stuff, sure, there were songs that I just did nothing but scream. But then there were songs where I was like, I could scream, or I could sing something really fucking melodic over it, see how it would sound. And, you know, trial and error. Some stuff worked out great, some stuff didn't. But in terms of playing, it was really neat because we definitely got a lot of traction out of recording the Gorilla Biscuit song, New Direction, and then even Victim of Pain, Diagnostic Front. You know, they opened us up to play with a lot of bands, especially on the East Coast. Like, you know, we got to be friendly with the Lifetime guys because they were a fan of, you know, our more hardcore stuff. And then obviously out of Lifetime became our friendship with Kid Dynamite.
Sure.
You know, and touring with those guys, we toured the Southeast and East Coast with those dudes in either 98 or 99.
Yeah.
And the majority of the people that came out were obviously Kid Dynamite. You know, we were in Kid Dynamite's turf, and majority of the people that came out were hardcore kids, but they were in our shit too. And of course, they weren't even paper shit. When we turned to each other at each of these shows, like, we have to do the whole Biscuit song. You're like, don't turn the hose on us so we don't turn these fucking do these hardcore covers. So I think Joe's hardcore influence, Dan's metal influence, and my, for lack of a better word, pop influence. I think, you know, especially with the Kid Dynamite split, that's when we figured out the best way to combine the best of all three worlds. And it's just a shame that was a trajectory we could have taken further, but, you know, life happened shortly after we recorded that record. So,
well, there's also I mean, you guys are on Hopeless Records. You're kind of the flagship band, for lack of a better word, on Hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
And and you kind of, you know, you helped them build their brand and build their label big time. Silverstein was on Hopeless for three records as well. And I'm kind of curious why the new record isn't on Hopeless. Did you talk to them?
We did. I'm going to be as diplomatic as I can because I've learned over the years that talking shit doesn't do anybody any good.
okay. I'm not going to talk shit, but here we go.
But these motherfuckers, let me tell you, no. I had a bit of a souring experience with Hopeless when my band After 88, The Story So Far.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you about The Story So Far, too, which is...
The real Story So Far.
The real the first one,
yes. We'll get into those fake assholes later. That's when I could talk shit. But I kind of had a sour experience working with them on The Story So Far EP because I felt like they didn't push that at all. And once the advertising for that EP ran out, then, you know, record stores stopped carrying the record, or they didn't know about it, and I just felt like they just kind of dropped the ball. And then we've been wanting to remix, especially remix Behind Bars for years. Dan's like, I gotta get these fucking tapes back. I gotta do something with this,
right?
Because I don't want to throw any extra songs on there. I just want to remix and remaster this motherfucker. And they weren't really good at communicating, and when they were, it was very I don't know even what the word is. Like, they weren't rude to us, but it was just very short. The communications were very short. They were just like very quick, you know, emails back or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when the time came for the shop, you know, we shot four songs off the record. We started shopping around to different labels. We sent it to Hopeless. We sent it to Revelation. We sent it to a whole bunch of other labels. And Hopeless said, I didn't have this conversation with Dandy, so I'm going to be paraphrasing him, but it was something like, hey, that's not the kind of music that we're really pushing anymore.
And wow, okay.
When I heard that, I was like, it was a bit of a sting. But again, I've been kind of vocal over the years about how bummed out I was at how they treated the Store Safari EP.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm like, I'm looking at the roster bands, and this is no disrespect to you know, Newfound Glory or Yellow Card or any of those bands. But I looked at the roster of the bands, and I was like, at one point, now they seem like they're the, instead of like a, their labels probably still out now, but certainly back then, they were like minor league record labels for a band to jump up to a major.
Yeah.
Whereas now, Hopeless, in my opinion, I'm not speaking to the band, in my opinion, they seem like they're a record label for bands that have their major label experience to be like, oh, major labels suck. Okay, come on down.
Right.
So there's that stable of bands now in Hopeless that had their time on a major label, and now Hopeless is just like, okay, well, here's, just take a, you know, a step or two, you know, down, for lack of a better way.
No, I think you're right. Definitely with like Taking Back Sunday and Yellow Card and All Time Low went to a major label and came back and stuff. I think that's an element of what they're doing. They obviously they do have some younger, newer bands like Neck Deep and God, I don't have the roster in front of me, but they have a bunch of bands that are up and coming. But I get it. I mean, I get it too from their perspective because like when was the last time they put out like a skate punk record?
Right.
Maybe it was behind bars. I mean, not behind bars. Maybe it was back on the streets. You know, I mean, you know. So it's, you know, it's. I kind of get it from their perspective too. It's just for me, I always remembered like when I was a kid, I would think of Hopeless Records. Okay, what bands are on Hopeless Records? Well, 88 Fingers Louie. That's the band. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys were on Fat Records for like a minute too. I'm surprised you didn't maybe go down that route.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. There's a bit of a, I wouldn't even see Bad Blood anymore. There was a bit of a tension with Dan and Fat Records because of how the whole Rise Against thing was handled.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was, you know, unfortunately, you know, I can't speak out of turn, but in addition to, you know, Joe splitting up with the band, you know, having those conversations with Joe and Tim, a lot of that was Mike and the label saying like, hey, no one's going to take you seriously with a guy with long hair in your band. So I think it was kind of like a communication between the label and Joe and Tim to, you know, tell Dan to kind of hit the bricks. So there's been some weird shit that still hasn't been resolved over the years. Now,
right.
That being said, we did Amnesia Rock Fest a couple years ago, and I think Mike was there because he was playing with me first. I don't think NoFX played that. He was just me first then. But Mike came up to me by one of the stages, and he's like, Dennis, does Dan still hate me? Tell me why he hates me. And I straight up said, you're going to have to fucking conversation with Dan, dude.
Like,
right. For once, there's band drama. It's got nothing to do with me. I was always the fucking, you know, instigator of that shit. I go, this Rise Against shit, that's got nothing to do with me. Have a conversation with Dan.
Right.
We talked for a little bit, and I think Dan felt a little bit better about that. But we just, one of our last shows of this European tour, we played Punk Rock Holiday.
Yeah.
And Aaron came out. Aaron was out.
Aaron, Colin's Fat Records. Yep. Just for clarification for people that are listening. Yep.
Yeah, sorry. Aaron Cohen of Fat Records. And she came into our green room, and she's like, is Dan around? I go, yeah. And Dan walks in, and there was like this kind of like a, I don't want to say sentimental, it was just like a pause. And Aaron's like, well, are you going to fucking hug me or what? So then he comes over and he hugs her, and then they went off and they talked. And Dan came back, and he was all smiles. I was like, has the hatchet been buried now? He goes, I don't say it's been buried, but part of the hatchet's in the ground now. I'm like, shit,
all right. Cool.
So there's progress. So we never sent the album to Fat because Dan didn't want to. And I had to respect his wishes. I might not have agreed with it, but
right.
I had
No, 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 no. That's fine. No, and that's great insight as to, you know, how that all shook out. Well, hey, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. The story so far, we were going to talk about that. And it's funny because when I first heard of the story so far, you know, the band that people listening to this know as the band, they're from, you know, California, doing some big things, putting out some, you know, popular band now. When I first heard of them and I heard people talking about them, I said, oh, shit. So Dennis is doing Story So Far again. This is great. And they're getting popular. Everyone's talking about this band. I'm like, oh, I know Story So Far. I got their EP. I have their EP. And everyone's like, what? And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I was so confused. And a lot of people, I wasn't alone. A lot of people were confused about that. And then it's funny because I was, you know, doing a little bit of digging around the other day, just, you know, doing research to talk to you. Not that I really need to, but, and then I saw that I think it was like 2013, you guys, the Story So Far, Chicago version, made a little statement saying like, basically, they stole our name and they knew about us and we're kind of fucked because our music is like their music and people are getting, you know, it's kind of a mess.
Yeah. On Spotify and iTunes, when you type up Story So Far, it would ultimately either have their picture with our music or our picture with their music. And, you know, they kind of got the ball, some communication going with, you know, with me and the guys in the band. And a couple of guys were like, we got to get a lawyer. We got to really figure this shit out. I'm like, hold up. We put out one fucking EP.
Right.
Like, we trademarked the name. Here's the ironic part is we trademarked the name.
Oh, yeah.
But we trademarked it in 1999. I think, right after 88 broke. I joined Story So Far literally a week after 88 broke up. Like, I was like, it was like a race to state to see who was going to start a band first, Dennis or the other guys. And I won. I was the winner. But, you know, the trademark was sold. I don't know the first thing about the legal side of that and would we even have a case. But we had attempted to reach out to their management and... I want to say it was your manager. We just said, hey, can we at least start a conversation about this? You know, no one wants to do anything, you know, litigious, you know, or anything like that. But we'd like to start a line of communication. And if I remember correctly, the email response we got was LOL. And that was it.
Wow.
And so then we're just like, what the fuck, really? So then one of the guys...
Like, that's not very professional,
No. And so then one of my guys, from my Story So Far, started a Facebook page, made everybody admins, and then it just became a war. It wasn't even a war with the fucking Story So Far. It was a war with us and Story So Far fans. Like, give it up, Grandpa. Nobody likes your old man music. And it's like, all right, enough.
Right.
Enough is enough. So we, for like a three-month period, we were trying to figure out, do we have anything to go with? And a couple guys still wanted to kind of pick it, you know, continue it, but you know, what's done is done.
Right. It's been a long time. No, I certainly was confused and that's funny that happened and whatever. Right. And maybe once if you play your cards right, you can get like a royalty check sent to the wrong address from like
right.
from ASCAP or BMI or whatever, like they'll get confused and
yep.
If that happens, you're just you're the one saying LOL if that happens.
Oh yeah, exactly. that $5,000 royalty check. Oh yeah, I'm in the Story So Far. I've been in the Story So Far longer than they've been in the Story So Far.
Yeah, and if that happens, and if that is happening or has happened, you're definitely not going to say that on the record. So
no, of course not. Certainly not.
That is very funny, Dennis. Well, hey man, thank you so much for taking the time. Before I let you go, I got two questions for you. I want to know what's up with 88 next, so you can tell the people, so people can come check you guys out on tour or whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What's up?
Next, we've got, I don't know when this is going to come out, but we're doing our hometown record release show for the new album, Thank You For Being A Friend. That's coming up Saturday, the 26th of August. And then we've got... I'll have September off. October, we'll be in your fine country doing a
nice
a bird attack Vertitech Presents tour. We're doing not quite Quebec City, somewhere in the outskirts.
Okay.
We're doing that. We're doing Ottawa, and we're doing Toronto.
Nice.
And it's, I believe it's us, Belvedere, and
sick.
Such Gold.
Sick.
Us, Belvedere, Such Gold, and Sled, which is Garrett from Bird Attack's band.
Cool.
So four band little trek. That's at the start of October, and then at the end of October, we're going to Fest in Florida for the first time.
Nice. That'll be perfect.
So that'll
for
be
you guys.
Fun.
That'll be really great.
Yeah, I've been wanting to go ever since the band started playing again, so
yeah.
I'm glad this happened. And then we just confirmed some East Coast dates. I don't have the dates in front of me, but we're going to be heading into the eastern U.S. In the middle of November.
Fantastic.
And then December, I believe we have off. January, we're going to do some Hawaii dates. And then we're going to figure out some new music, and fingers crossed, get over to Australia and Japan.
Perfect, dude. That sounds amazing. So people all over the world pretty much can check out 88 Fingers Louie, you know,
yes,
many years later after, you know, back on tour, and it's great to see you guys back. The new record is awesome. Is that a Golden Girls reference?
It is a Golden Girls reference.
Perfect.
We have long champion Golden Girls for as long as I can remember. And it also kind of ties to just kind of gratitude that we can all still play music together. And it's kind of a way of saying thanks to everybody that's stuck by us over the years too.
Well, one of my very good friends has a Golden Girls half sleeve with all
that's
the Golden
so
Girls.
Awesome.
Yep, he does. And there was actually a punk band. I don't want to give you any ideas, but
yeah.
there was a punk band in my hometown, local band, shout out to KWH, that used to cover the Golden Girls theme song, like punk rock.
No shit.
I don't want to give you any ideas, but it would be pretty
no,
sick.
No, that's our walk-on music.
Oh, okay.
It's a walk-on music.
But well, you should walk on and then start playing it. Like, go, okay, da-da-da-da, thank you for being a friend, you know? It'd be sick.
Maybe we will.
Maybe you will. Hey, if you need a manager... Okay, dude.
Change my man. All right.
There you go. No, thanks so much. So, I want to do something different this week with some music. I always play music at the end. I'm going to play two 88 songs. I want to play your favorite, and then I want to play my favorite. So, what's your favorite 88 song?
Oh, I'm going to go ahead and plug a new 88 song because
I knew you'd do
not?
That. I knew you'd do that, you bastard.
You know, I hope this doesn't sound too high-headed of me, but I my favorite song on the album Change. I do generally love everything that we put on this record, but I would say kind of Now More Than Ever. I think All the Right Words would probably be the song I would go with.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play that, and then I'm going to slam them with my favorite after. So, hey, Dennis, thank you so much for doing this, man. It's great to talk to you. Great to catch up. And as a fan of your work, it's just really, really, really nice to talk to you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And I hope to see you in Toronto. Actually, no, you know what? I'll be on tour. I won't be able to make it. Like, I miss every show. I always, but hey.
That's unacceptable. But whatever.
I'm flying. I'm flying somewhere.
Tour.
I'll see you.
Have a great fucking tour, Shane.
All the best, man. Hey, thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, bye.
See ya. So there it is with Dennis. Wow, that stuff about Rise Against was pretty crazy. It is, you know, kind of wild to think about a band as monumentally important as Rise Against is, you know, now to punk rock, to mainstream punk rock. And, you know, if Dennis hung out a little bit longer in that band, who knows? Rise Against just may have never become a thing. Next week, we will be back. By the way, I'm going to start putting up these episodes every Tuesday, not every Monday. Basically, just my schedule these days. I almost always have Mondays off, so that gives me a chance to do some last-minute work and some finishing touches on the episode. So if you guys are waking up Monday morning being like, where's the new episode of LSS? Well, it's coming now on Tuesday, and I'll put it up early if I can, of course, but, you know, Tuesdays just work out a lot better for me, and I hope that you understand. If you don't, then call the hate line and give me some shit, okay? But hey, if you want more, If you want more than just the one episode on Tuesday or Monday or whenever the hell I feel like putting it up, check out the All Access Club. Right now, we've got about 220 members. It is a super, super fun group. Everyone's hanging out on the Facebook. We're exchanging memes. We're talking about music. We're debating. I'm on there too. I'm doing monthly Q&A sessions. Sometimes I get on there and play a few tunes. It's a really, really great group. And also, of course, you get bonus episodes. You get these really cool patches mailed to your house every 3 months. We do some contests. We do some meetups too. Shout out to everyone coming out to Sinnerfest. And if you want Lead Singer Cinder merchandise, the only way to get it is through the All Access Club. So check it out. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. All the info is there. For as little as $6 a month, you can be a member. And again, it really, really does help me keep the lights on around here and keep this show going week after week. Once again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. So I'm going to play Dennis's pick, and then I got to play a classic. When this record came out, back on the streets, I was so excited. I had loved 88 Fingers Louie, and they had broken up, and I thought that that was it for the band. They came back with this record. I remember I went to the record store on the first day to try to buy it. I couldn't find it anywhere. I went to like four record stores, and I finally got the record. I listened through, and I remember hearing this song starting out with the bass, and I was like, oh man, this is going to be a good one. And to this day, it's still my favorite. So I'll play Dennis's pick first, new jam. But here's the classic, 100 Proof by 88 Fingers Louie on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.